Well, good morning. Welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. We are the 195.1 FM. And, of course, for over 50 years, we're on 1080 AM, your hometown radio station serving Northfield and Faribault. And, of course, Denison and Dundas. We can't forget Cannon Falls and Kenyon. And let's go over to Elko, New Market. And we got to say New Prague, good morning. And, of course, good morning to Little Chicago. Yeah. And Farmington and Castle Rock, Empire, we do it all right here on one radio station for over 50 years. Well, did you have a nice weekend? I certainly enjoyed my weekend, spent it with my wife, got a little story to tell. We were at a restaurant and they had those high tables and the high chairs and they're close together and we were sitting at one. And as you dangle your feet, my prosthesis came off. And I thought, well, I'm right in the middle of a meal. And I looked at my wife and I said, remind me that my prosthesis fell off and it's in my pants and I'll just slip into it. No problem. And, of course, we got done eating and it's time to go. It's crowded. A lot of people at tables that if you pushed your elbow back, you'd hit the other person's chair. And as I got up, I started falling. My wife didn't remind me, and I didn't remember that it had fallen off. So as I stood up, I fell. And when I fell, I grabbed onto things like people and chairs. But this one guy sitting at this one chair, right kind of next to me, kind of looked at me and said, "What the beep?" You know, because I kind of fell on him. And he was kind of angry. And I said, "Hey, I'm sorry, sir, but my leg fell off." By that time, I had reached onto the chair, and he grabbed me. And he says, "Your leg fell off?" And I said, "Well, yeah." And I had to show him. And he said, "Oh, I'm sorry, sir." But at first, he was mad. Like, what, are you drunk or something? Well, anyhow, that was a fun thing to do and talk about. But something even more important to talk about is to continue a conversation with a gentleman that I had on the air last week. And his name is Fran Widenschittle. And he is the retired CFO of Rice County. And he is also working part-time after retirement. And last time you were in here, friend, and first of all, welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Wayne.
Talk right into that microphone, sure. Nice and loud. And here's the deal. Last time you were in here, you were wearing a short jacket, and you had a tassel cap on your head pulled down to your eyebrows and a comfortable shirt. And today, you don't have that hat on. You wore it all last time we were here. You wore it in the studio. And you don't have it on, and you have on a tie and a white shirt. And I'm going, it's Monday. You're retired. Was it the fact that you were in this great studio here and you thought, you know, I better dress for this? Or what's the story on that, Fran Widenschittle?
Well, I am still working part-time and I'm helping the county out with their investments. I had some success in the past, and so the county has chosen to retain my services to help continue that that tradition of making above average interest earnings for our county portfolio to try to keep our property taxes low.
Now, do you get a commission?
I do not get a commission. I just get paid hourly.
Now, have you ever, because you're a whiz with numbers, have you ever said to yourself, well, you know, I'm doing this on a, I'm sure, an hourly wage or whatever, and you make the investment, and a year later, you look back and you say, wow, if I would have just said, give me 10%, you'd have been better off? Or can't you do that legally?
Well, I suppose I could. I'm not in it for the money. I enjoy doing what I'm doing, and so Yeah, I just like doing that, and the money's not that important to me. I certainly could be making a lot more than what I'm making now.
What surprised me is when I was chairman of a nonprofit board of directors, I had a friend, a lifelong friend, my late friend Ed Lambert, and he was into writing grants for nonprofits, etc. And I asked him if he would help us out and write some grants for us, and I sure would appreciate it. And if you're successful, maybe we can negotiate a percentage of the dollars you were able to generate for us. And he said, well, I would be glad to do that, but it's illegal, or you can't do that, or it's not altruistic, or whatever the deal is. Mm-hmm. And here I got this buddy that was a great grant writer, and I couldn't ask him to do it for nothing.
Sure.
And then at the same time, we didn't have a lot of money to pay a man of his status to go out and generate that those grants. So you have to have a fixed amount before you go to work for them. And if it's successful, great. If it isn't, you just paid a lot of money for nothing.
Sure.
You ever get involved in writing grants for the county?
Not so much for writing grants. I do have a CPA business on the side, and I am,
you do,
and I am doing some work for Hubbard County up there in Park Rapids.
Well, you're busy.
So I've got those two things that I'm busy with.
Well, you're going to get all kinds of mail from the W-2 forms they have to mail you coming in January. So that's got to be pretty interesting. Now, tell me what you I'm really wanted to start off where we left off, but while it's on my head, Fran Winchell is my guest. Fran, what do you think is going to happen in regards to the new tax laws that went into effect last year?
Well,
blue-collar, you know, not rich people, but...
Sure. I think most people will see some sort of decrease in the amount of taxes that they pay. Certainly some that were high itemizers probably will not see as much of a, tax windfall, but... it'll be interesting. I'm just starting my personal taxes, and I was going to try to compare the two amounts under the old system versus the new system to see, just how much.
Sure. To pass on to other people to your CPA company.
Yeah.
What is the advantage? Of course, we now have a federal stoppage of wages. What did they call it? You know what's going on. Government people aren't working that are in jobs that aren't important, which always kind of struck me as funny. If they're not important, why even have them? But one of the things that some people think that this shutdown is going to be really a problem for the people that are low wage earners in government. And we all know, well, maybe... Some people don't know. They'll get that money. It always works out. They get back pay.
That's the way it's occurred in the past, is what I understand.
Sure.
It's been basically like a paid vacation.
So it's a paid it's a paid vacation for those individuals. And a point that some side of the aisle and the other side of the aisle have to work out and get it done. But don't worry about those poor government people that are considered not unimportant. They will get their money. The only thing is they might make a problem in regards to automatic withdrawal, and that will create a little bit of a problem, and it might affect somebody's credit, but there's probably some kind of a bill that says do not ruin their credit because the government is shut down.
Yeah, and I got to believe the morale of those people after some time goes by here is not going to be very good. And there's some very important jobs that those individuals have, in the National Park Service, and I know, some of the IRS agents and And others, TSA, and others, that have very vital jobs that, you know, protect and make sure that our federal government is functioning properly.
And one of the good things is that the IRS employees are going to get way behind in their work. Okay. But I've often wondered, April 15th is the cutoff date before you get into fines and late payments and all that. But my question is this, and I don't know if you can ethically tell me the answer to this question, but so that you can lessen the opportunity to have them check out your taxes and, you know, not have to go in for to one of the agents and explain yourself. Is it better to file early or file right at April 15th in the hope that they'll, of course, it's a day of computers, but hopefully that there's so many that, you know, your odds of being drawn out to be investigated would be less?
I don't know for sure. I'm not an IRS agent. I would think that they sample, so it wouldn't matter. I would think that... you know, some of the higher risk returns, you know, kind of the self-employed rather than, you know, if you're working for a company that, you know, files, you know, W-2s and sends that information into the IRS, those people would probably have less risk than someone who's, you know, doing their own books. Yeah, I'm not sure what the IRS guidelines are and who to choose to audit, but I would think it would be some sort of sampling methodology.
9:14 on the Wayne Eddy Affair on this Monday morning. It's a January 7th, and tomorrow is Elvis Presley's birthday. What do you think of that?
Hey,
I know that because my dad was born on January 8th. January 7th, 2019. Got to get used to putting that down. And have you, if you go through a CPA instead of the TurboTax and all that other stuff, are you less likely, do you think that you're less likely to be audited than if you do it yourself or have one of the H&R or whoever do it?
I don't really know if that would have less. I would think that it would be risk-based, yeah. You know, that if you know, a certain type of return has more risk associated, that there would be a higher susceptibility of audit. And if it's, you know, lower risk, then that's what I would believe.
Do CPAs ever go with the person that's being audited to help them explain
yes.
to individuals?
Yes, what I understand. And just to be clear, I do not do any taxes other than my own.
Okay.
So I am not...
These are just general
sure, just
questions.
General. Yep, I'm not a, yep. You know, but I don't do personal or corporate
I'm,
or...
I'm not trying to put you on the
sure.
spot. I'm just trying to get some
sure.
educated thought
sure.
on
yeah.
that. Now, I have been audited.
Sure.
Both by the federal and the state. And it is... at the time, I wasn't worried, but boy, did they dig. And they got down to the littlest, tiniest things, and I had a box full of receipts and said, go through them, sure. find them if you can. And one time, the auditor, it was a federal auditor, and it was lunchtime. And I went down to the Rubenstein. And I invited him to join me. He says, well, you can't buy me lunch, and I can't buy your lunch. I said, no, we can just not even talk business. You know, it's, you know, we've been here all morning. Let's go eat something and come back and finish the audit. So we walked into the Rubenstein. It was packed, just packed. There were no tables available. And I don't know if I should say their name. But anyhow, the president and the vice president of the bank that I was banking at were seated at a four-person table. And they saw me looking around like, gee whiz, and wrote, hey, Wayne, would you like to join us? And yeah, he said, well, okay. So we sat down. I introduced my guest to my two bankers, and they said, oh, it's nice to meet you. Oh, we got to get going now. I'll never forget that. They didn't want to sit at the table with us, with the auditor. And it ended up they found a piece of equipment that I couldn't prove I paid the price that I paid for the piece of equipment, except for half of it, because it was half cash, half personal check. They said that after all of that work, they came back and I owed them like $60 or something like that. Huh. And I went, whew. That's interesting. But, boy, every year you start thinking, I'm going to save all my receipts and all that, and pretty soon, if you're not organized, they're in a cookie jar somewhere, and you go, oh, here's some. Oh, that was 2 years ago. 9:18 on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Plenty of time to get to the QB, the Quarterback Club on Highway 3 and 3rd Street in Northfield. And Dale Finger, who is a Northfield High graduate, a townie, and he owns and operates the QB, and that means locally owned. The money that you pay for your food that goes into the wages of the young people that work there and the others that worked there for over 40 years stays right here in town. And it doesn't go in a little night bag that they deposit in one bank here in town and then they're directed to New York City or Kansas City or wherever. It stays right in town here. So appreciate that. And better yet, you can really appreciate their food. We're talking about their baby back barbecued ribs with mountains of madness oozing all over them in the form of their special sauce. Roasted chicken, everybody loves that. And, of course, flame-broiled burgers, the only place in town you can get those. The QB, the Quarterback Club on Highway 3 and 3rd. Fran Winchell is my guest this morning. He is married, and his wife's name is the same as my wife's name. Her name is Julie, and he was born to Herb and Bernie Winchell from Cold Spring, Minnesota, went to Ricori High School, and that was a combination of three different schools, and he is a child of Herb and Bernie, who are busy. He has a brother, Mike, plus three, that means 3 years older, and then along came our guest, and then Brian.
Yes.
And Jane, and Pat, and Gary.
Yes.
So you had a nice, long, wonderful life growing up, and you lived in town, and your dad and mom, or your dad was a teacher, and your mom was a homemaker, and, you know, she enjoyed raising the children, and you, of course, are not old enough to have lived in the era before washer and dryers, right? I mean,
right.
Your mom had a washer and dryer.
Right. She always had one.
You're not, I mean, I'm from the era where dryers were the clothesline, and washing was a tub that swished around and then went through a wringer, and then you'd catch your hand in it, and yikes! And, of course, you had refrigerators and televisions and, you know, all the amenities of a person born in, let me see if I can guess what year you were born. You were born. No, this isn't. That isn't your high school year.
No, that's
okay.
Not.
You were born. Excuse me. What year were you? I graduated from high school.
1979 is when I graduated.
Okay,
from high school.
And then I quickly did this. 79, 69, 50. You were born in 1960.
I was, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. And so what really happened in your lifetime in regards to crazy things on a national, international level, you were pretty much too young to get into the love generation, the Haight-Ashbury era. But then going into the 70s, you were probably aware of the Vietnam War, but pretty young, you couldn't be drafted. So you get out of Ricori High School, and you went off to was it MIT, Harvard, Yale? I can't remember which one it was.
A similar school, St. John's University in Collegeville, Minnesota.
Yeah, Johnny, which wasn't very far from your home.
No.
And you did have a room, but you could bring your laundry home and enjoy your stuff. And then I asked you what your mom's favorite, what your favorite thing was that your mom made. And if I remember correctly, it might have been baked chicken.
Baked chicken.
Wow.
With cornflakes for a crust, which is really
you know,
good.
Some of the dumbest things I remember, and I can't remember, like this morning, I walked out of the house, and I made two trips back into the house on things I forgot. You ever do that?
Oh, yes.
Oh, good, good. How about, go ahead.
You're not alone.
Yeah. Nowadays, one more thing that they add to, oops, I forgot it, and I can't live without it, is a cell phone.
Yes.
And I forget my cell phone all the time. And my wife always says, well, I texted you on that, you know. Uh-huh. And I go, oh, well, I just don't pay that much attention to it. But, boy, I think people are too much into it. In that restaurant, there are people that were sitting together, and they're looking at their phone, not even talking to each other, just looking at their phone.
Yeah, certainly a different day and age, huh, than when we grew up.
Have you got your phone all figured out? Are you pretty good with that?
I'm pretty good, I think, generally. Okay. I'm not entirely into a lot of social media platforms, but I can use it to communicate and get information and get to websites and
it's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing.
We had the staff, Jeff and Terry Johnson, who own and operate KYMN Radio, had a staff Christmas party, and people that contribute to KYMN Radio. I was amazed because when you come in the building, you hardly see anybody, right?
Right.
And they had put us up against the wall and took a picture of all the people that contribute. And holy cow, there are a lot of people that do different shows, but they just come in and leave just like I do. But you know what I noticed in this office, and I was telling this to my wife, when I was the general manager of KYMN Radio out in the country before computers, there was a lot of social activity. I mean, talking to one another. We didn't have cubicles. We had desks, but we had studios. We had one writing a commercial, another one producing it, another one doing the billing, another one doing the sales, and another one doing the engineering, and you're going. Now, you come in here, it's quiet, and everybody, and not just KYMN, everybody's on a computer. Uh-huh. And my wife, who manages an office, she said, well, yeah. I said, what do you mean? Well, yeah. Well, they're doing their job. They're on the computer. They're working. And they're looking at it, and they're doing things. It's just different.
Yes, certainly.
You must have seen that happen in your lifetime.
Oh, yes, yes.
Tell me
yeah,
about it.
I was, prior to college, we really didn't have computers other than going to the high school. I think they had, a centralized computer where you could, do some programming and stuff like that. So when I went to college, I ended up getting a computer science minor. So I ended up spending a lot of time on a mainframe computer there. And then when I got into the workforce, personal computers just started coming out, and so I ended up buying one of those and got a laptop for work, and we did a lot of our audit work, auditing counties on those
a laptop. How long ago?
That was probably
a laptop. I thought they were kind of like new.
Probably in the early 80s.
They must have been big and heavy.
They were, at first, yes, they were, probably maybe 24 inches by 24 inches by 10 inches, kind of like a big suitcase that you'd haul around. Those were some of the first ones. And then, they certainly, got smaller.
How about floppy disks?
We used the 5 1/4 floppy, inch disks.
I remember our office manager of 17 years, Patty Jorsted, who quit and went to, St. Olaf College and, then went on to law school and got her law degree. And I remember her with a handful of floppy disks. And she was walking out the door, and I says, "What are those? Those are floppy disks." "I know." "Yeah, but why do you have them in your hand?" "Well, they're backups." "Uh-huh." "What do you mean backups?" "Well, in case there were a fire here and our computer was burned down, we'd lose all of our information, so we have these floppy disks that back up, and I take them home." Now, uh-huh. I don't know what they do nowadays, but they probably have a computer somewhere else. The cloud.
The cloud, where you send everything to an external data center and save it out in the cloud. So, yeah, times have really changed.
Does that mentally affect your mind in regards to not having to add and subtract and multiply and divide and figure out things out? Instead, it just all goes onto a computer and you don't have to think?
Since I'm an auditor, I look at numbers and I do calculations in my mind to do reasonableness checks. Because sometimes the computer isn't always right or not programmed correctly, so that the wrong answer may come out. So you need to have some awareness of what is a reasonable answer, because sometimes computers make mistakes if they're not programmed correctly.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
People program computers and people make mistakes.
I'll be. I never thought of that.
So
I thought they were in, what's that word? Anyhow.
Infallible.
Infallible, correct. I just started reading a book, can't tell you the name of it, but it's about government and big corporations and the way that the Justice Department can ruin people. And this book does not start in the last 4 years. It starts way back when a fellow by the name of Stevens was a senator from Texas, and the dirty politics, like the Justice Department, accused him of things that he was not guilty of, but it happened before the election, and he got ousted, and then all kinds of things start coming to a bubble, that there was some mishaps going on, dirty politics going on in the Justice Department, and he was ready to come out and expose everything. And he was in a plane crash, a curious plane crash, and was killed. And then one of the Justice Department's lower-ranked attorneys, who was doing the paperwork that made this guy out to be a bad guy and was charged with, as it turns out, false charges, committed suicide. And I'm just getting into the book, but it's all about how the Justice Department and politics and what can really go on. It's crazy. But Enron was the big deal in that. You remember Enron?
I do remember that.
Okay, now I'm nowhere near the Alaska ship crash. It's just how they built that company with ghost numbers and did spinoffs. That remember the one of the guy's wife's initials and their children's initials, and called it an LTD, and they put money from Enron into that company, which didn't really do anything. But then other consultants would go to that company for consultants, but they were the people that were getting the money from that company that was getting it from Enron.
Mm-hmm. Arthur Andersen, I believe, was
the accounting firm,
which was one of the largest accounting firms.
And
I had
total respect for them, and it was the first accounting firm, is that what I would call it, that I was really aware of, is that there's big accounting firms. And I learned that back when I first came to Northfield, because where I lived, the people, an older couple, owned the eightplex that I lived in. And we got to know each other, and they said they use Arthur Andersen as their accountant. And so I always had this respect. Well, then it goes down the tubes.
Uh-huh.
Tens of thousands of people lost their jobs because Enron lied.
Uh-huh.
And they were not guilty of the things that they were charged with, right? If well, the, in your recollection?
From my recollection, there were some documents that I think were destroyed by the auditors in the process. Was that your recollection, too?
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons that they ended up...
And it comes right down to greedy individuals, and they ruin many, many thousands of people's lives and put all that money in their pocket and live happily ever after, if you can live happy after doing that.
I think there were a number of people that ended up going to jail on that. Yeah. Yeah, that was very unfortunate circumstances.
And following that, the big bank had to be rescued. the name's not coming. It's a great big bank in on Wall Street.
Lehman Brothers.
Yes. And who'd ever think, you know, who'd ever think something like that would go down the tubes and others?
Right. Yes.
Terrible.
Yeah. And it, too much risk, I suppose, on there.
And then the federal savings and loans, they all went, not all, but most of them went belly up because of shenanigans in accounting.
So there you go, Wayne. That's why you need professional accounting people out there and people checking to make sure that things are right. Now, they don't catch every situation, but... certainly, there would probably be more of that if you didn't have, you know, a mandate from some of these public companies to be audited.
And frankly, Fran, people in your position in other cities and counties and states probably manipulate numbers for their own benefit.
The only thing with cities and counties, I was an auditor for a number of years, and really... the people in government don't really have the financial incentives to, you know, make the county look better or the city to look better than they are, or even to look worse.
But
and I did do when I was an auditor some white collar crime investigations and.
You know, for a county?
For the state auditor's office.
Okay.
Yeah, so I had like two or three cases. One case where the jail administrator was taking board of prisoner. The county would board out of county prisoners and then get paid, and he would get the checks from these other counties, and he would take them to the bank and then cash them and put them in his own account and use them for personal benefit. And ended up buying a nice car with that, and the undersheriff at the time ended up discovering this and alerted us, and then we did kind of the forensic analysis on the case and determined the extent of how much he had taken.
Was that hard or pretty easy to figure out by looking at the current counties that are paying for Alta County? Prisoners.
I mean, sometimes it's not exact, but you could. I think I ended up looking at who they had done business with, and contacted them to say, well, how much money did you send to that county? And
how could he cash those checks?
He just took them to the bank, and I'm surprised that the teller didn't say something about
when it's made out to the county.
County. And, yeah. Yes. So that was...
Speaking about that, one thing that really amazes me is when a government employee in the Treasurer's Department or whatever department it would be are able to fraudulently take money for their own personal use, and then ultimately get, just happened up in Dakota County recently, ultimately getting caught in an audit, and they say, my God, this person has stole over $1 million in the last 5 years. And I'm going, well, how can that be? I belong to nonprofits, and we have two people sign the check. And what do they do on the city, county, and... How can a person take all that money?
How does that happen? I think just that you need to do your due diligence when you're on, you know, a board or and ask questions of, you know, the various transactions of the entity and make sure that you understand what's going on. So it's you know, the administration and the, you know, the board of directors need to be aware and you know, ask some of those questions and because they are the overseers. Management is the overseers of you know, the financial activity for you know, governments and corporations.
Do you think that the credit card makes it a lot easier for people to steal from nonprofits, from their own companies or their own government unit?
Certainly, you need to have internal controls in place to monitor the activities that go on credit cards if they're being charged to that corporation. So, as long as there's good internal controls, you know, policies and procedures that are enforced and in place, there shouldn't be problems. So, it gets to be where, you know, when the internal controls are lax and the overseers are not keeping a good eye on. You know, the transactions that are occurring, that's when problems occur.
How often do you think a business, a nonprofit, should have an outside audit?
It depends on the size of the organization. I know at Rice County and most of the cities in the state of Minnesota, we have annual audits, so we have a private independent CPA firm or the Office of the State Auditor audit, you know, the books on an annual basis. Certainly, if I know in state of Minnesota, if some entities like soil and water conservation districts where they don't have a lot of expenditures, they may have different rules where they're audited, you know, every when expenditures meet a certain threshold or you know, maybe every other year. So there are different thresholds based on how many dollars are going through through your books. So I think it's good to have an annual audit.
I'm going to take a break, and when I come back, if I don't forget, I got a good question coming up.
Okay.
Fran Winchittle is my guest here on KYMN Radio. He's the retired former CFO for Rice County, but he still is doing accounting work both privately with his company and also helping other counties. And he is the best investor of, there are 60 counties that are riding with your investment ideas out of the 88?
The 87 counties in the state, and I know there are 66 or so that are in the Minnesota Association of Governments Investing for Counties, which is the acronym MAGIC, which is a money market fund that those counties oversee. And, that money market fund, and I was on the board for a number of years and chaired that board, and they had up to $1 billion in deposits that they invested on behalf of county government.
Now, if I knew you and we were close friends and we were out having a beer after one of your board meetings,
sure.
Could I say to you, who did you recommend in regards to your portfolio for the counties? Who did you recommend?
Who did I recommend for?
Could you tell me?
I could tell you what bank I invested money with. It's public information.
I hope it wasn't Bank America. We'll be right back, right after this important timeout.
Hi, I'm Alyssa Bandel, social worker at Three Links. Being a caregiver to someone who has a form of dementia can be exhausting. Finding social support is one of the best ways you can cope. At Three Links, we host caregiver support meetings. Facilitated by Three Links social workers, the meetings are tailored to your questions. Join us the second Wednesday of each month from 4 to 5 p.m. at Three Links Care Center. Call 664-8865 or find out more at threelinks.org.
Hi, welcome to the Subway ad for the $3.99 6-inch steak and cheese sandwich. How would you like it? Can I have it with an auctioneer, please?
Sure thing.
Hey, give me $3.99, $3.99, one sandwich bid, now two, now three, only $3.99 each. We're talking tender, juicy steak and melted cheese with crisp veggies and your favorite sauce and your choice of freshly baked bread. The $3.99 six-inch steak and cheese, going once, going twice, hey, sold for $3.99 to the hungry guy in the front of the line. Subway, make it what you want.
Limited time only at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.
We're back on the Wayne Eddy Affair. We were just talking about investments, a former investment club that I was involved with for 16 years. And I just told you some of the investments we made, and you made a comment just as I was putting my headphones on. What did you say after I told you about those investments?
Oh, yeah, that was a good, you know, some very good investment decisions. So you did really well, huh?
But you know,
beat the market averages, I would guess, and with some of your performances.
Yeah, performance was a big one.
You must have had some dogs in there too.
Oh yeah, we got we bought Sheldahl.
Oh.
And 2 weeks later, and 2 weeks later we lost all of our money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we wanted to support
some of our local businesses.
You know, we bought 3M, which was good. Polaris was a good one, and PepsiCo, that was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole reason behind that was because they were going to open up China.
Oh,
and
sure.
You know, they have Frito-Lays and all mm-hmm. of those chips and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
huge market.
The Chinese love them, mm-hmm. and. Holy cow, so that turned out pretty good. Okay, the question I have, are you ready?
Okay.
If you own a restaurant,
okay.
whether you run a clean operation, both, I'm talking about cleanliness now, and have all the proper equipment and all that, or whether you're running one that's kind of a dump and dirty and maybe mice and all that, doesn't matter which one, when that health inspector comes in, those owners, operators, they get the chills, like, oh boy, okay? Even if you're confident and everything's perfect, you still get that, oh my gosh. Now, I had that mm-hmm. feeling when the FCC would stop in. What was it like being on the end where you walk in to somebody's company or some corporate operation or for the state of Minnesota? When you were an auditor for the state,
sure.
did they give you champagne and lobster?
No. Well, I don't know. When I was auditing county government, I felt I was doing the county's service in trying to recommend good internal controls to protect their employees from mishandling cash. And so I took it, my job as being an educator and trying to explain how to do things, you know, the correct way to keep people from getting into trouble. I know I did have some auditors that I've worked with over my career that were the gotcha type auditors, and I did not believe in that approach for auditing, because there's a lot of people out there that just don't have the background or the experience and don't know the proper way to do things and just need the, you know, the education in order to do things correctly.
When you do that audit, is it all based on come down to taxes not paid or taxes overpaid?
For county government, usually the audit entailed all the revenues and the expenditures for the county. So the property tax revenue is a major system of the county. So we'd look at all the internal controls. Rice County collects, I think it's over, the total, you know, with taxes and everything, over $120 million is the revenue that comes in and goes out.
Rotates, yeah.
Yeah, some of it just is tax money that goes out to the cities and schools. So we would, you know, try to look at all the revenues that are coming into the entity and you know, make sure that you know, that they're reasonable. We'd look at how they did last year to determine if there's any fluctuations that we should be looking closer at, and did sampling you know, for the expenditures and sampling for the revenues to see if they're classified properly on the financial statements. And
do you work with the assessor?
I do. Yep, I did. You know, when
would you be a referee if somebody complained?
Well, the assessor's job was he's all about fairness for the county and making sure that the correct values are on the properties. After he's done determining those values, he ends up bringing those values over to the auditor treasurer's office, who ends up taking those values and calculates the tax and sends out the tax statements. So they're two separate functions, two separate offices, and so.
Is it good they're separated?
I think in some counties they're joined. I would say as long as you have different individuals responsible for the different areas, I think, you know, that would probably be an adequate control. But, you know, there are some nice checks and balances that certainly two separate departments have. But but other counties have them in one big taxpayer services department. So
January 7th, 2019, I have a gentleman who has a CPA degree. Is it? Can you go further and get a doctor of?
No, I've
no?
not
okay.
heard. I've not heard of that. There are other types of designations that you can take exams for and get CPA-like credentials. So.
Okay.
In specialized fields, but the CPA is more of a general, and you have to have a certain number of years being in the profession, so in order to be a licensed CPA.
People listening right now are saying, "Why that gentleman sure has a nice, mellow, non-exciting but direct voice." And you dress conservatively, but you are, you know, involved in a lot of things, particularly running and things like that. And we'll get to that. We're getting close to 11 o'clock. By the way, I have to tell you, at 11 o'clock, plant-based foods are hot right now. But I don't know. What about the meat? Don't we need meat? It's sort of the all-American go-to food. Or is it? Terry Knight's guest today on 15 with the Author is Robin Asbell, author of Plant-Based Meats, Hearty, High-Protein Recipes for Vegans, Flexitarians, and Curious Carnivores. Robin tells us what mock meats are and how you can get meat flavor like bacon. It's not just about tofu. There are recipes for basic meats, sausages, lunch meats, and even pepperoni pizza. Robin discusses the important ingredients such as kitchen bouquet and liquid smoke. That's at 11 o'clock this morning on today's 15 with the Author with KYMN's Terry Knight. I had a question for you, and I'm looking for it right now in my head. And it was a good one, too. Well, it's going to come back. It's going to zip in there, and I shouldn't see these things out loud. People think I'm getting old or something. What about, it was really a good one, too. Oh, well. Have you ever had I know what it was. The community of Northfield, the city of Northfield, and you being in the loop, I'm sure you are familiar with every city, Morristown, Faribault, Northfield, every township in regards to their money handling and all that. I mean, you aren't responsible for them, but you certainly know them and probably are aware of anything.
I through the media, I do not get generally a copy of the financial statements or review the financial statements, but I am from the
your
media.
Your circle of friends
yes.
and all that.
So,
radio stations and all that.
Yeah, I do go to lunch from time to time with the finance directors of the city of Faribault, city of Northfield, and so I do handle the I did handle the elections, so a lot of the clerks would come to election training, so I knew a lot of the clerks in the county. And
I went to election training.
Did you? Yeah, you're right. Great.
Election judge for years.
All right. Gotta love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I do. Yeah, especially you see people I haven't seen for a while, you know?
Yeah, I encourage, you know, people to try that. Really become an election judge, understand, you know, how our system works, and I think then you can have some real confidence in how the election results are tallied. And
unless you live in Chicago.
Yeah.
So here's the question. I don't know how many years ago it was, but probably within, time flies so fast, but certainly within the last 20 years, 15 years, but maybe in the last 10 years, the city of Northfield lost $3 million.
Okay.
Do you remember that?
I do remember that. That was, my understanding of the situation was that they had used a broker to buy certificates of deposit from different banks, but that they would give the money to the broker, and the broker ended up not buying, you know, some of those certificates, and you diverted the money for personal use. I know they ended up, I think, getting some of that back, but I think they ended up losing some dollars as a result of that broker.
So how does the city protect themselves against that?
What Rice County does is we safekeep with a third-party organization for our negotiable CDs and our municipal bonds. So U.S. Bank has a trust department, totally separate from the bank. So all our securities that we buy that are of those type go there. And then we don't use brokers for buying direct CDs with banks. We end up buying them directly with the bank and holding the actual certificate of deposit at the county. And so that's...
What, is there a maximum on a CD?
For a county government or city government, you have to have all your deposits collateralized or insured. And if it's over the $250,000 FDIC insurance limit, you have to have either a letter of credit or some type of insurance or collateral pledged by the financial institution. So if they go under, you're going to be made whole.
Well, the reason I ask that, let's say you won the lottery.
Okay.
And let's say that you won $5 million cash.
Yes.
I mean, it's your money. So I'm thinking, do I have to run around to 20 different banks at $250,000 deposit because I can't put it in one bank because it's not going to, you know, you could lose it all if they go down the tubes?
You can put it anywhere you want.
Yeah.
But you risk, you know, if that bank does fail, you could lose your money. So if you wanted to be completely safe, you could put it in 20 different banks. And or there are other programs out there, too, that banks have that could collateralize those deposits. There's a CDARS program that enables banks to use the FDIC coverage of other banks to cover deposits. So there are some options out there for depositing more in one financial institution and still be, you know, either insured or covered.
But
so I would talk to your local bank.
But there are banks that fail.
Yes.
Okay. So you put you win $1 million and you put it all in one bank. They drop out. They fail. So you get $250,000 from the feds, and the other $750,000 is gone.
Cool.
And let's say go on try to recoup it through holdings and selling. So,
mm-hmm.
And when I win the lottery for $1 million, Can you imagine having $1 billion? What would a guy like me do, or this fellow over here?
Hire professionals to take care of it.
I was good friends with George Anderson, who was the first lottery manager. And I had conversations with, first thing you do, don't tell anybody. Second thing you do is you seek out an investment group and a lawyer, and you get everything in a row. And then Minnesota is a state where you have to identify the winner. There are states that you don't have to. The winner can come in and leave and nobody knows. But here you have to expose the winner so everybody can call up and ask for money. And I thought, well, that wouldn't be much of a problem to find somebody that would, take care of, here's what I would do here. And I, okay. And it would be so much fun to have all that money at my stage in life that I don't need a castle. I don't need a lot of things because I'm happy the way I am, although I would splurge on dumb stuff. But, to be able to, have a foundation and give to nonprofits. And then when you think about it, the people that run foundations are being paid with the money that was not directed to give away. But you have to pay people to give away your money. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes.
Have you ever been involved in a foundation at all in your private life?
Not
for a nonprofit.
I know I'm on the finance committee for the health HCI organization.
What's
here,
that?
The Healthy Community Initiative.
Oh, okay.
So I provide some recommendations based on the finances.
Do you belong to like the Rotary or the Lions or the Eagles or American Legion or?
I am not part of any of those organizations. I was very active in some of the professional organizations when I was the auditor treasurer for Rice County. I was the past president and a board member for the Minnesota Counties Computer Cooperative, which is an organization that is the go-between software vendors and counties.
We're going to take a break,
okay.
And then when we get back, we'll start with your graduation of St. John's and
okay.
How you ended up in Rice County. We'll be right back.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
Are you looking for spacious senior living in Northfield? Feel at home at Northfield Retirement Communities, Northwood Pines. Available for individuals and couples, this assisted living combines the privacy of one-bedroom plus den apartments with family-style meals and care available around the clock. Visit us online at northfieldretirement.org or call us today at 664-3466. Northfield Retirement Community. Innovation. Choice. Tradition.
We're back live and in color on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Good morning, everybody.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, will you still be sending me a Valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me?
Oh, I just used that theme song at the 10 o'clock hour on the Wayne Eddy Affair to remind me that the Beatles and I have something in common. We're all around the same age. But my guest this morning here is Fran Winchettle, and he is talking to me about, I've been hammering him on all this other stuff, but I find it interesting. Sure. But mm-hmm. we left you off at St. John's, I believe, last time you were here. You went to Cold Spring, you lived in Cold Spring, went to Ricori High School, then you went to St. John's, but you lived close by in Cold Spring, bring home the laundry and all that, and you graduated from St. John's, and then you have to go to postgraduate school to become a CPA?
No, I ended up right out of college. I had an accounting and business administration major with a computer science minor. I got a job with the Office of the State Auditor, working with then Arnie Carlson, who was the state auditor.
Did you like him?
Yeah, he was a nice guy. And
He's sincere, you know, yeah. And he's right in the middle. Mm-hmm. Elected to the from the right, but kind of leans to the left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was. Yeah, I thought he was also had more of an education approach to doing government audits, and so I learned a lot. Those first 5.5 years that I worked with him, and ended up getting promoted through the ranks, and then left after about 5.5 years to go work for Stearns County.
When you say you get promoted through the ranks, is it anything like the Army where you're an E1, an E2, an E3, or in government, G1, G5, or whatever?
Well, they start out at a local governmental auditor, and then I think the next step was a local governmental auditor senior, and then they have, I think it was principal, and then director, and
he's so showing an increase in salary.
Right. And responsibility.
Okay. But you didn't do the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 thing.
You
used names.
Names, okay. Yes.
What would be the highest? State auditor?
State auditor, I suppose, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, anyhow, you were with them for 5.5 years. What type of financial problems or successes were going on in the 5.5 years that you were so close to the budget? And the budget for the state of Minnesota there was $700 million?
I did not do any state audits. It was just county governments that I focused on, and it was mostly...
From the state auditor's office, you focused on counties?
Yes, the state auditor's office does not audit the state government. It's the legislative auditor's office that audits.
Okay. So Jim, auditor is kind of like a non whatever.
Yeah. So they audit. I think at the time they were auditing like cities of the first class, and then most of the counties in the state. Since then, they've changed the laws to allow CPAs to also audit county government.
What was the most memorable thing, good or bad, in the 5.5 years?
I did some of those white collar crime investigations, which was interesting. And then,
can I ask you? Sure. We're talking. Is it Peters or Petters? The guy that had the warehouse full of televisions. He ended up Petters. In prison, of course, and lived high off the hog. I had a chance to meet him one time and see his home. And how can people be so stupid as to give money to somebody and they don't know the collateral is not real, that they don't really have a warehouse full of equipment?
Well,
isn't that stupid?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you kind of trust... I mean, there are a lot of different trust levels out there, and some people have, they don't verify and or don't seek independent verification before they make some of their investments, and sometimes that can play out really good for an individual, and sometimes it can be very bad.
Now, if you audited a white-collar criminal and he was charged or she was charged, it's public information, so you can tell me what cases you were doing. Maybe we'll be familiar with them.
Well, no, these were probably... Well, another case that I did, I audited a purchasing director up in Stearns County, and he had some petty cash funds and was diverting that to pay for his alcohol problem. And so I ended up going and doing a pretty thorough analysis of, you know, how much he took. And
how much did he take?
I don't recall the exact amount, but it was...
Was it from the prison?
No, this was just a petty cash fund that he had. And
In a public position?
In a public position, yeah. He was the Stearns County purchasing director at the
time. So you only dealt with public, not private?
Not private, no. Okay. Private. So it was just county government.
How much money did he take?
I think it was probably around $1,000 or something like that. So not a whole lot. But
they paid you more than
$1,000? Probably to investigate, yes. Yes, probably so.
So what's the biggest number that you caught people?
Well, like that jail administrator that I was just talking about, I think he ended up stealing, I think it was around $28,000 or so, and this was 20-some years ago. So,
yeah, over a short period of time?
Over a short period of time.
So it became a real bleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and then his deputy said, hey, guys, you better check this out.
Yeah, yeah, there's something fishy here, you know, that we're not... He was looking at the financial records and noticed that we weren't getting in, or they weren't getting the revenue that he thought they should. And I was wondering, well, where is that going? And this guy had a higher standard of living than what, you know, his salary would suggest.
We had a school administrator here that I ran into at a restaurant up in the cities. I was having a business lunch, and he came up to the table. Hi, Wayne. I said, hey, how you doing? He said, can I speak to you for a moment? And I said, absolutely. Excuse me, sir. And I went out the hall. He says, Wayne, you aren't going to believe this, but I forgot my credit card. And can you help me? And I said, sure. And at that time, I didn't carry a credit card because I always thought credit cards are dangerous. Uh-huh. And so I gave him some cash, and he paid for the lunch he was having with whomever it was and left. And he did ultimately pay me back, but it was weird. Uh-huh. It was weird. I don't know how he did that, where he could get the money to pay me back. That I don't know how he did that. I mean, it seems to me it would look weird on the books.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the circumstances were.
Yeah, because he paid me back in cash. Well, maybe what he did is pay me back in cash, had the receipt, and then...
Yes, submitted it. Yeah,
okay.
I'm sure that's
what
he did.
There we go.
All
right. 9 minutes after 10 o'clock, my guest this morning is Fran Winchettle, and he is the retired CFO from Rice County and also has his own CPA office that you don't work at law.
No,
much.
I just work out of my home.
Yeah. So anyhow, we're talking about your life, and you spent 5.5 years on the state level in the Arne Carlson administration, and then you go off to Stearns County.
Stearns County.
Was that because after you did the audit for the state that you got to know the people at Stearns?
I had worked at Stearns County for about 5.5 years and had done that investigation. And, I ended up applying to be the financial manager, and I had the best qualifications. I don't know if that investigation helped my chances of getting selected, but probably didn't hurt.
Is that 11 years then? 5.5 with the state, 5.5 with Stearns?
No, 5.5 with the state, and then I worked just 2 years with Stearns County.
Okay.
And then
was that easier because it wasn't the state?
It was a new challenge. I was from I grew up in Cold Spring, and I had family. Both my wife's parents and my parents are from the Cold Spring area. So it was easy.
Were you and Julie married at the time?
Yes, we were married.
Okay.
And,
a Benny.
She was a Benny and graduated from St. Cloud State. And and she also went to Mankato State too. So, so anyway, we ended up lived in St. Cloud for a couple of years, and then an opportunity came up with the Office of the State Auditor auditing county government in the northwest area of the state, so we moved up to Detroit Lakes and spent about 2 years up there.
How did you like that?
At the time, I think it was 1989 to 91, and when we got up there, the economy was kind of depressed, and they were losing population, and so we ended up not enjoying it that much up there. There's a lot of lakes, and I enjoyed fishing at the time, and we kind of missed family, so.
I love to fish. I'm holding up two fingers because I got two things I want to ask you.
Okay.
Number one, when you worked in St. Cloud and when you went to school in St. Cloud, was that before or during when, and after, still goes on, a lot of racial unrest?
Sure. That was before, I believe. Yeah, I don't recall a lot of instances when I was in high school of, you know, racial issues in the St. Cloud community. I don't recall.
Well, you read about them since.
Yeah, you know. So since, certainly.
Okay. Now, Detroit Lakes question. A lot of people are pretty much irritated by the fact that they have an investment in a cabin or even a house on a lake up there. And they, of course, it's their summer vacation and all that. And when elections come up, they cannot vote, even though they own property that are being taxed by the Detroit Lakes County, and feel it's totally unfair that decisions are made because they're raising the taxes on those homes or cabins that are lived in only 4 months out of the year because they can, and they're from out of town, and who cares? Did you get a lot of feedback on that?
That was when I didn't work for Becker County, but, you know, the Becker County officials, I'm sure, got questions like that, as I did in Rice County, especially from the people who owned a lot of ag land in the county and paid a lot of taxes. They were unhappy that, you know, they couldn't vote here, you know, specifically, you know, to affect, you know, different things that were on the ballot. It's a law in Minnesota. You vote where you live.
I think it started on a federal level because, I don't know. Yeah. You're the guy that went to school about this stuff. But, you know, frankly, I think it's a pretty fair deal because if not, a person that owns a lot of property in a community and can vote, they can come in and mm-hmm. vote beneficially to their business, et cetera.
Right, so. And the people live in the community and have to serve under the, you know, just the decisions like that are made by the county boards or city councils.
Just like the people that worked in the mines up north, in the coal mines down south, where they could go to work for the company, then they rented from the company, and they had to vote the way the company wanted them to vote. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you think you have a hard time in life and think about it, folks. You got it pretty good considering some of your peoples that fought for the benefits that we do have. And I'm talking, okay, so now we go to the state, we go to the Stearns County, Detroit Lakes for 2.5 years.
Becker County. I worked for Becker. Mark Dayton was the state auditor during that time, so I ended up working with Mark Dayton for a couple years there. And then
now, Mark Dayton was the auditor.
The state auditor, yes.
If there were any deficits, did he just say, take it out of my bank account?
No, I don't think so.
Was he a pretty sharp guy?
He was pretty sharp. I will say that I think from what I understand, he did not take a salary from the state. I think, I think it maybe was just $1. I think he subsidized, you know, his standard of living with his probably his trust fund. And I know that after I'd left, I know I had heard that he had office parties at the Metrodome. So I'm not sure how that... maybe not office parties, but education sessions.
Getting together,
conference sessions, where he got all the auditors together to talk about issues.
So you've been involved in not political, but the government world all your adult life?
Yes.
Okay. So should we find out why you ended up in Rice County?
Okay. I worked up in in Detroit Lakes, doing audits up there. And when I got up there, I didn't anticipate having to be away from home as much as they required. I was away from home about 6 months out of the year where I
Why?
Had, not every day, but during the week, I'd had to go out to do various county jobs and stay at overnight in these smaller towns and I had two little girls at home at the time, and I wanted to spend a little bit more time with them. So I ended up deciding to take a job down here in Rice County.
What, by the way, how many kids do you have?
I have three children.
And who's the oldest?
Lauren is my oldest, Lauren.
Is that a girl or a guy?
That's a girl.
And how old is she?
She's probably around, born in 86.
Probably.
86, so.
96,
32.
Oh, she's an adult. And then after Lauren?
Catherine.
Catherine. And do you know how old she is? Do you call her Kathy?
Katie, actually.
Katie, okay.
Yeah, she's 29.
And the last one?
Katie's 30. And then the last one's Ellen.
Ellen?
Ellen.
Ellen.
E-L-L-E-N.
Okay. And how old is she?
Ellen is 27, I believe.
Okay. Grandkids?
I have two grandkids.
Really?
From
one or
Lauren.
Two? Lauren has two? What are do you remember?
Henry and Calvin.
Henry and Calvin.
Yes.
Henry and Calvin. Now, that's pretty good. Those are old names. And how old do you think your grandkids are?
Henry is going to be 5 here.
Ooh, fun.
Tomorrow.
Fun.
And then...
Tomorrow?
Yeah, and then Calvin is 2.
Going to get together?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we're getting together tonight to celebrate my daughter Lauren's birthday. But
when's her birthday?
On the 5th.
Just had a birthday. And then Henry's going to have a birthday.
Yes.
Okay, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah. And then I've got, and my daughter Catherine has one on the way.
Oh, so one in the oven is what they say?
So well, in February, yeah.
Did you all get together for Christmas?
We did, yes.
At your place? Or
at my place, yes.
Okay. You live in Northfield?
I do.
What part of town?
I live over on the southeast side of town, over by the golf course.
Okay. Well, that used to be the southeast. Now the southeast is all those homes.
Right.
One of these days I'm going to do this. How long you been living in Northfield?
Since 91.
91? Okay. Quite a year, that 91. But someday I'm going to write down all the buildings, not necessarily businesses, but all the buildings that weren't here when I moved here.
I bet there's quite a few.
Oh, anything south.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, the southeast part of town, that all was cornfields and hayfields.
Uh-huh.
And I remember when that was it, and it kept going and going. Do you live by the soccer fields?
Sibley Swale Park.
Oh, yeah, okay. I remember.
Right off of Prairie.
Yeah.
Yeah, not too far off.
I remember when that was built.
Oh, you do?
And I remember a guy, Fred LaMarche.
Okay.
I don't know if you know him.
I don't know.
He was a JC, and he worked at Sheldahl, and his wife, Marcia. And we had get-togethers at their home, and Cleet Thill, a former Chamber of Commerce executive, lived out there. And the word was, this is it. You're out in the prairie. It's beautiful. Don't worry about it. You're in the country.
That sure has changed.
Yeah. But that is growth. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair on this Monday. And our guest this morning is Fran Whittenchittle. And he has three daughters. And one daughter gave him a couple of grandsons. And another daughter has one on the way. You know what it is yet?
It is a boy.
Oh, mm-hmm. Do you want to know that? Three boys. Are you from that school?
Yeah, it's kind of nice to plan. So
pink or blue, you know. But I don't know. I remember as a young man, I had a lot of cousins that got pregnant all at the same time. And I'd ask them, well, do you hope it's, this before you, they could tell you what it was, mm-hmm. do you hope it's a boy or a girl? I don't care what it is as long as it's healthy.
Yes.
Oh, I thought to myself, oh, come on. You care whether it's a boy or a girl. What do you mean? Well, now I understand totally. Of course, the main objective is to hope that they're healthy regardless yes. of boy or girl.
But I think a lot of people want variety, you know, would like, you know, a yeah. child from both genders.
Yeah.
I think ultimately. You know, if you have multiple kids.
Well, you've got to be happy that you got Henry and Calvin because you have yes. all women.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Trying to balance it out a little bit.
At 23 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock on a Monday morning, once again, Fran Whittenchittle is my guest, former CFO for Rice County. And so we got you from Detroit Lakes down to Rice County?
To Rice County, right.
Okay.
There was a job offered for the finance director position here. Steve O'Malley, I don't know if you remember
that. Sounds familiar, yeah.
That name, he was the county administrator probably
oh,
from,
yeah.
from 1988 to probably about 96 or something like that. But so he ended up doing a search, and so the county board hired me. To be the finance manager.
Well, you came with some fantastic credentials. I mean, you were president of this, chairman of that.
No, that was that came after I was in. I became elected.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of those positions were appointments from.
Do you recall who was on the board when you got elected?
Or Molly Worland. Selected? Molly Worland from okay. town. Bob Tuma.
Yeah.
Jerry Piener.
Yeah.
Milt Plaisance.
Yeah.
And there's one more. Ann Voss.
Okay.
Yes, was the county board. Yes.
And you had a report to them monthly, biweekly?
Whenever necessary. I a lot of times attended board meetings. Yeah, periodically.
Did you hate that?
No, I kind of thought it rather interesting to hear, you know, everything that was going on at the county.
Did you have a seat at the desk?
I was in the crowd. In the crowd.
In the crowd. Mm-hmm. Did people know who you were? I mean, not the ones that knew you, but did other people realize that the county auditor was CFO was sitting next to him?
Well, I had a suit and tie on. I don't know. Yeah. They probably thought I'm...
Did you ever have to get up and explain and testify sure. and show yeah. PowerPoints and all that?
Yeah, yeah.
So it was it televised in Faribault?
No, it wasn't televised back then.
Okay. Did you tape them?
That came later in my career. We ended up... I think that came when we ended up moving over to... The new government services building.
Oh, yeah.
New meaning it's like 20 years.
Yeah, I know it's still new. Yeah.
But yeah, so I think we ended up getting, you know, video equipment, and then we started recording.
Did you know Gordy?
Gordy Kosfeld? Oh yeah. Yep. Okay. Gordy and I go way back. And
yeah.
He took care of a lot of the meetings back then, and. Yeah.
Hey, he's a good
very
guy.
Very nice
good
gentleman.
Guy.
Yep. I always.
You know, he wanted to run for county commissioner.
He did.
And there's a little bit of politics involved in that. And I talked to him about that, and it got to be ugly. And so he just withdrew his candidacy. And I had run for county commissioner at one time, and fortunately, the people I was running against were okay with things in regards to
your
equal
position,
kind and
yeah,
all that. Because
mm-hmm.
I just told them I'm not going to campaign on my show, but I'll buy ads, you know, on my station and Faribault station.
Mm-hmm.
1027 on 1080 Radio. Did you move to Northfield before, right away, or did you live in Faribault for a while? How did that work out?
No, we ended up living in an apartment in town for a couple of years.
In Northfield?
Yeah, in Northfield.
Why? I mean, the reason I ask you that...
I owned a house in Detroit Lakes that I had a hard time selling.
Yeah,
so,
but I mean...
And the banks wouldn't give me money to buy two homes at the time, so...
But why Northfield? You're the Rice County employee, and the courthouse and the offices are in Faribault, mm-hmm. and you chose to move into Northfield. That's the why.
Sure. Well, both communities have a lot of great assets and resources, and I guess ultimately I came from a college area. Cold Spring wasn't that far from St. John's, and kind of enjoyed the college atmosphere at St. John's. And when I came to Northfield, Carleton St. Olaf College is here. My St. John's comes down here to play, basketball, baseball, football. So I can attend those games, and I do regularly. So it's just been really nice having those colleges in the community. And there's a lot of beautiful things in the area. I know I really enjoy the river and some of the bike trails in the area, and I'd frequent them. And a lot of times I'll start in Faribault and, canoe the river down to Northfield. And
ever seen any snakes?
I have never seen a snake on the river.
I made that trip one time Cleet Thill. We were trying to think of a way we could do a promotion, Faribault to Northfield on the Cannon.
Mm-hmm.
And we came across these two snakes, and they were copulating, I suppose the word.
Mm-hmm.
And it was scarier than heck because they were huge. And
bull snakes or...
Well, is there a black snake? No. Yeah.
A bull snake?
It probably is a bull snake. George Risgar, the former doctor here in Northfield, who was a naturalist, I asked him, I showed him pictures of it. Back then, I had to wait to have it, developed. And I think they were bull snakes. And mm-hmm. and you get kind of eerie sitting in the canoe looking at them from 4 feet away. What are they going to do from 4 feet away? They're not going to, besides you're busy, jump in the boat. But... anyhow, we made that trip and, had a walk part of it at that time. Mm-hmm. How about you?
I've made that trip many a time. I race canoes with that friend group I was speaking of up in Mora on the Snake River. And so we train on the...
Snake River.
Yeah. Good tie-in. But, yeah, so we practice on the Cannon. So I've done that stretch from, Faribault, all the way to the Mississippi, many, many times, different segments. And the Straight River is another river that flows it's very fun and can be very exciting, can be very dangerous, too, depending on the time that you go.
Who'd ever think if you came through and looked at the Cannon under regular circumstances, who would ever think how high that thing can really get and dangerous and treacherous and cause people to lose their life on that river. Did you, a couple of years ago, the Defeated Jesse James Day Committee put together a canoe race.
Yes.
I think it was from Dundas to Northfield.
Yes.
And put a lot of work and love into it. Did you get involved in that?
I think Paul Bowmaster was my partner
year,
and we placed second, in that race.
Well, tell me about it. I didn't get a chance to see it, and where did you start? Where did you stop? Did you have refreshments at the end? Was there a get together at the end to hand out medals or whatever? How was it as a participant?
I think since that was one of the first years that they were doing it, they did not have a high participation rate.
That's why you came in second?
Yeah. Got that right. No, we have, Paul and I are fairly accomplished. And there were other, I think the team that ended up winning it, he also participates in the race and is part of our friend group up in Mora, Minnesota from Northfield. And he's
who's that?
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Good old, what's his name?
Jeff Peschka.
Oh, okay.
Do you know Jeff?
I don't.
He
I
used
may.
To work in the school district here. Yeah, I think he's over in Kenyon now. Okay. As the
a good candidate for the Wayne Eddy affair.
Possibly. Yeah. Yes.
Help me out on that.
I would think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he had a partner from town and yeah, that he's very good.
Was it strenuous? Did you have to walk part of it? Because the river can be pretty low in September.
I don't recall ever walking, but yeah, so it's pretty much constant paddle hard,
yeah.
You know,
good.
whole way. And yeah,
where do you end up?
So we ended up starting, I think we started in Dundas and then just ended up by the Cannon River Place apartments down there.
Sure.
That park.
By Riverside Park.
By Riverside Park.
Under
yes.
the bridge
under
and
the
you're
bridge.
Done.
Yeah, yeah, under the bridge.
Where the car show is.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Was it going on when you were in the contest, the car show?
No.
What is that on a Sunday then?
I can't remember.
How many did you do?
I think there were only like three participants.
Okay.
For that event.
And I don't think it's being done anymore?
It hasn't been done since then.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because of liability or...
Well, there's a lot of things about it, but, you know, one of the things that I enjoy is people that are really enthusiastic about their thing, mm-hmm. whether it's riding in the raid or whether it's the getting entertainment for the beer garden or the horsey rides mm-hmm. in the carnival. Whatever it is, if you're chairperson of that, you get really excited about it. And you come to the committee and you say, let's start this, and I'll take care of it and I'll handle it. And at first blush, as far as I was concerned, it was like, well, that's a good idea. That would be fun. That would show off our river.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be an attractive thing for others, like the Rotary's Run and the bike race and all of that. And
yeah, we have a beautiful resource right in our backyard, and it's amazing what I see when I canoe down the river. You know, different wildlife and eagles. There's a lot of eagles' nests along the river.
Even a softball game as you go by, or a baseball mm-hmm. game, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But what about why were so few? Is it that there are few of you that would do that, or was it because of the time of the year? Was it because of people that do that are back in school or teaching or whatever?
I don't know. I think it was just the newness of the race, and there weren't... I like up in Mora, they do hand out medals for different classes. They have about a little over 200 vessels that participate in their race, and they have a lot of pro boaters that go around and do these types of canoe races and to try to win
medals. No money?
Yes. I don't believe there's any money involved.
So what did you get for second place?
A good job. I've had on the back.
An attaboy, huh?
Attaboy.
And second place gets an attaboy. First place, two attaboys.
Yes.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be back on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio out of Northfield, Minnesota, the home of cows, colleges, and canoes.
I'm Daniel Hummel, and at age 58, I was overweight with diabetes, high blood pressure, and feeling extremely tired and lousy all the time. CrossFit Scopus and Dundas helped me get my life back. I knew there was an answer beyond taking medications. It included exercise. I remember the day I walked into CrossFit Scopos and asked owner Greg Berube for help. I felt embarrassed to go to the gym. Greg put me at ease. Since starting with Scopos, I not only have my life back, I feel good. The weight has come off and I'm stronger every day. Mentally, I'm back in the game. The training is led by coaches and scaled for your pace. Find CrossFit Scopos in Dundas off Highway 3 next to Menards.
You're getting married. Congratulations. Now let's talk invitations. Should they be traditional, contemporary, or rustic? Do you need inspiration or looking for something outside the box? From your save the date to your thank you and everything in between, By All Means Graphics will help you define your style to fit the tone of your wedding. From design to can you print what someone made for me, we're here to help. By All Means Graphics is located in downtown Northfield at 17 Bridge Square. Stop on in to meet with one of our team members or call us at 507-663-7937 to set up an appointment. You can also find us online at byallmeansgraphics.com.
From Cold Springs, Minnesota, and Ricoury High School, then off to St. John's University, and then off to, I may skip some things, but off to some county jobs, state jobs. We have the retired CFO of Rice County in the studio right at this very moment. He and his wife, Julie, live here in Northfield. They have three children, all in their 30s, except for Ellen, and two grandchildren, and now consulting. And you have your own practice yourself. Is that what you call it, a practice, when you're a CPA?
Yeah, you can call it that. Yes, okay. You could call it that.
Okay, so I got you to Northfield. I did ask you earlier if you got involved in any associations in Northfield.
Sure, and some of those, I haven't really gotten involved much on a local level, but when I was an elected auditor treasurer, there were various associations that I participated in that were more statewide and hadn't had a statewide impact. I was a part of the Minnesota Association of County Officers. I was an officer in that organization, including the president, and then the Minnesota Association of County Auditor Treasurers and Finance Officers. I was the president of that association, and then, as I said, the Minnesota County Computer Cooperative organization that handle a lot of the software that's provided to the various departmental areas for county government. Just a number of other statewide committees that I was involved with, regarding government efficiency. And I also sat in on a lot of the Association of Minnesota Counties board meetings as a liaison from the MCCC organization. And also there's an organization called the Minnesota Inter-County Association. And there's about 17 counties that belong to that, and they have an executive director that helps them with legislation and education on various topics that, when the legislature enacts laws, that needs to be communicated to county government. And so Keith Carlson is their executive director. And they have a fiscal officers group that meets once a month. And I also participated and chaired that organization.
I have a question.
So, sure.
Are people that so you're the CFO for Rice County. How many other individuals were in your office? You were the director of that effort. How many employees did you have
to oversee?
Oversee, yeah.
There were 10 individuals.
Wow.
So.
Wow. Boy. I thought you just sat back there with a little hat on and your sleeves rolled up. Oh. And
when I was the auditor treasurer, I had a financial manager under me and an accounts payable and elections coordinator, and then also a property tax and elections coordinator, and
sometimes
different customer service people that ended up handling the counter and doing a lot of certainly important work on behalf of the citizens.
Now, offices like, let's take Sheriff, just happened in Ramsey County, will have a director who runs for re-election, and somebody in his office challenges him. And it's also, it makes for a pretty interesting race. Have you ever been challenged by anybody in all the years that you were the main man?
Well, I was the finance director for, I believe it was around 7 years, 7.5 years at the county. And when the auditor, treasurer Lorraine Nelson, decided to retire, I ended up running for that open seat. And there was another individual in the county who was the social services accountant at the time, ended up running for that seat, and I ended up winning that election. And then after that, I never had opposition and ran unopposed. Yeah.
Did somebody encourage you, or did you say, you know what, I can do this?
Well, when I originally ran for Lorraine Nelson's position, I ran under the auspices that I would combine the financial manager position and the auditor treasurer position to save approximately $100,000.
Yeah.
And save a position.
So you would eliminate the position that you had.
I would do the same things that I was doing, but also do...
Yeah,
you know, the auditor treasurer. So do both jobs.
But you had that other job first.
Yes.
So you eliminated your job and took the full time
and took the duties.
And
the county board was
happy
about that.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
So I think that's what helped me get elected, and I got a lot of support, you know, from members of the community and some of the board members too.
Do you ever get involved in the justice system as an auditor?
I do audits and look at more of the financial side of, you know, some of the aspects of the justice system, but more as it pertains to county government.
How about people that run departments that just say, man, we need more people, or we need more money? Do they have to give you a printed out form of the reasons why and then argue with the commissioners about that? Or do you make a recommendation and say no or yeah?
Well, in Rice County, the way things had operated in the past were that a lot of the department heads would make their proposals, that they would send that to administration. Administration would compile all the budget requests, and certainly there were more requests than resources available or potentially available. So someone had to go through each of those requests and make sure that the requests were of a nature that could be accommodated. And certainly there were times where administration had to make reductions to elected officials' requests and appointed official department requests. And I think over the years we have had some wonderful department heads. They have been very understanding that they can't always get everything that they want. And you know, a lot of times it would be if there was a major initiative going on in one department, then, you know, they got the resources that year. The next year it would be, you know, somebody else's turn. So
when the Rice County Historical Society would come for a request for money, kind of almost an assumed donation or whatever. Did you ever run into any problems helping them out or telling the commissioners that we can afford to give them this money and it's an important part, or don't you you don't get on a bandwagon for any particular group? You just kind of do the numbers?
Well, a lot of the administration would, you know, some of the internal departments, we would screen and try to put together a budget that might be acceptable to county board members. And we had some initial conversations as to what they wanted included. And so we tried to build a budget on that. But some of the outside agencies, we left up to the board to make those calls, because sometimes they had their own feelings as to how much
agenda,
should be how much should be funded to those. And those were relatively relatively small amount of the entire county budget.
I remember how before Sue Garwood was down there when we proposed back in the early 70s that we wanted to start our own historical society. It stirred some feathers down there about county support for us. And it all worked out. You know, it took work, but it all worked out. Do you think, like I think, that when an agency wants some money, let's say that they're getting $1 million this year, and they think that they need $1.2 million next year, so they'll ask for $1.5 million to get their $1.2 million.
Well, they would have to, in all cases, you know, at least at the county board level, the county board here is very good at looking at, well, what are they going to use the money for, and making, good decisions as to, making sure that the money is spent wisely and benefits, you know, the citizens accordingly. So we have a very good board that looks at the details and doesn't look at the number.
I'm somewhat cynical. Okay, can you tell? I'm just thinking of ways. Okay, so now I get $1 million budget, and I'm going to ask for the $1.5 million to hope to get $1.2 million, but I haven't spent all of my $1 million that they gave me last year, so now I got to get rid of it so that they know I need the money. Have you ever seen the speed of spending?
Well, and usually if that's the situation, you know, administration says, well, you're not going to get that money in the future, let's spend some of your existing budget on those initiatives to satisfy them, and you're still going to get the same as what you got last year, but we want to make better use of, you know, your appropriation that you're already getting. So
And that's justified in the way it should be, but I have heard of departments spending money so they could get more money that And so they had to hurry up and spend the budget.
When I was there, along with the budget team of, you know, some of the administrators that we've had in the past, we've always looked at pretty much every dollar that gets spent and try to make sure that those dollars are spent wisely and not not just because the year is running out. Okay. That's a bad reason to spend money. I don't spend my own personal money like that, and I wouldn't expect that the county spend their money
that way. Enough about all that stuff. I'm going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll find out some of the hobbies that you have and some of the things that you're doing. Yeah. Talk a little bit about Lauren and Katie and Ellen and your grandkids, Henry and Kelvin. And don't forget, coming up on KYMN Radio, we have the plant-based foods, which are not, going down. They're hot right now. But what about the meat? Do we need meat? It's a sort of the all-American go-to food, or is it? Find out with Terry Knight at 11 o'clock right here on 1080 AM.
You have an old junk or car in the garage or on the farm? Call Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300. Get the most cash for your old junk or vehicle and have it taken away for free. Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300.
I love Grandpa's new home. There's so much to do.
That's right. Millstream Commons helps improve the lives of seniors through all kinds of fun activities. Personalized care from a dedicated and well-trained staff, amazing creative meals prepared fresh every day and served in a social setting, live-to-be-healthy fitness classes, private apartments with all the amenities of home, and a place to continue your relationships with family and loved ones. Millstream Commons, your vibrant life continues here.
10 minutes before, it's 11 o'clock. Friend Winchittle, my guest here. Friend, I know you're a runner, correct? Okay, now, are you one of those guys that runs around Northfield in the morning and you have a name like 10,000 Aches or something like that?
Those guys are too good for me.
Really?
I'm not in their league.
Okay.
I used to be a marathon runner. We have a friend group in town that we used to run quite often. I've run like 10 marathons, and usually we do
full marathons.
Full marathons.
Where do you hit the wall?
Usually at that 19, 20 yeah. mile mark, it really gets
You do
gets
grandmas?
I've done grandmas like 5 times, I think.
You do the
Twin Cities I've done yeah. you know, several
which,
times.
Which is more beautiful?
They are different different races, yeah. yes. And certainly
we
grandmas...
We can't talk race on the show, I'm sorry.
Grandmas, you're running along the coastline, so that's gorgeous because you can see the city of Duluth in the distance. And certainly there are more people encouraging you on and at Twin Cities, and it's a beautiful time of the year when the leaves are falling.
The cathedral, the capital.
Yes, it's a very beautiful urban race, so they're two unique races.
Do you stock up on spaghetti before you race? Is that
usually you eat some carb to get a lot of carbs or energy for the race and and then goo packs. Sometimes some runners carry goo, which
goo.
It's a kind of like a
protein?
A paste that you consume and while you're running the race to give you a little extra energy to help you finish.
I remember saying on the air a while back about nuns telling us that our bodies were temples and we have to take care of them. Mm-hmm. And you think you just shove a hamburger in your mouth and you eat because you have to, or you. And, you guys, people like yourself, realize what your needs are, and you fulfill them. What about bike racing? Do you do that?
I don't do any bike racing, but I do bike tours. I know every year they have the Defeated Jesse James bike tour here in town, so I've done that in the past.
And that's well-organized.
Very well-organized, yeah. And a lot of bikers do that annually, and it's a very fun tour and really showcases, some of the assets of the community here. So I do that, and then also up in Mora, Minnesota, there's a bike tour that's about 50 miles up there that we do annually.
Do you ski?
I do ski. In fact, the Mora Vasalopet is coming up.
I like that name.
Yes, I've done that for the last... since about 2007.
But they had to cancel one time.
Several times, yeah, because of lack of snow.
Yeah.
So, but that's like a 22-mile cross-country ski race that
you ever mush?
I've never done that.
Roller skates? Inline?
Don't do that.
Skates? Ice skates?
I do cross-country ski a lot in the... Carlton Arboretum.
Yeah. Hey, we got something in common. When I first came to town, I used to ride my dirt bike in
in the arm.
Can't do that now.
No.
But then you could. We did.
Yeah, in St. Olaf, they have some beautiful facilities up there.
Chess?
I've never done
theater.
Chess. I was a City of Northfield reserve police officer for several years.
How did you like
years.
That?
I enjoyed it. We worked some of the St. Olaf Christmas events.
Tell me, and be honest about it, okay? Tell me about the time, and probably in front of a mirror, the first time you put on your auxiliary police uniform. You got a big smile on your face.
Yes, that was a different look. I've never supported,
Did you feel the power of the uniform when you were out walking around?
No, I don't know. I've always been a public servant, so...
But you're wearing a uniform and a badge and the whole thing, and you're at the walking through town during Defeated Jesse James days or up at St. Olaf or at Carlton when the president's here.
I'm not much into power.
You didn't?
Like that.
Okay.
No,
you're saying power. I guess that isn't what I was thinking. I was just thinking about dependency in regards to, I'm wearing this uniform, I'm a deputy sheriff, and people are dependent on you to do things, particularly the real sheriffs and deputies. Mm-hmm. Crowd control or whatever.
Right.
And, you don that uniform, you're expected to be available in the event of need, whether it's somebody fainting or whatever.
Right, and to control traffic, you have to be assertive and indicate you know, where where to park or where traffic should be going. So,
speaking about going, you're going to be going in 5 minutes because we're getting close to five. So I want to talk about Julie and your children, Lauren. What is Julie doing right now since you're retired?
Julie works at Dakota County. She was at Rice County for 25 years and enjoyed her experiences there, but wanted to try something new. So she's now working at Dakota County, and so she's
you know what I'm thinking in my head?
What's that?
P-E-R-A.
Para, yes. She is a para employee.
You were?
I was a para employee also. Sure. So
it's going to be a comfortable retirement.
She's worked
as long as you have taught the people in the counties and the state how to invest our taxpayers' money. It should give you a good return for PERA because it's earning money.
Right. And I've often thought about trying to run for that position at the state level, you know, being on the State Board of Investment.
Then you would get your high five.
Well, I already...
Dodgers?
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, okay. I am collecting a pension.
Okay, so now that she's... your mom was a housewife and then went into teaching, I think. Okay, what does Lauren do? 32 years old?
Lauren is an oncology nurse up in the metro area.
Oh,
so
close by.
And, yes.
5 and 2-year-old Henry and Kelvin?
Yes.
Okay. And how about Katie?
Katie works for SPS Commerce, a computer company up in the metro area.
How about Ellen?
Ellen works for 3M in their medical division.
Proud of all the girls.
I am very proud of them.
So where
all
was...
of them went to college. Lauren graduated from St. Cloud State. No. Katie graduated from St. Ben's, and Ellen graduated from St. Olaf here in town.
Oh, okay. Well, how'd she like that? Did she bring home the laundry?
Yeah, it was just across town. Yes, definitely.
Okay. So when's the last time that Julie and Lauren and Haiti and or Katie and Ellen and Henry and Kelvin were all together at one time, and you, of course, there, to take a picture, perhaps?
On the 29th of December, we had a family get-together at our house and had our Christmas. And so, yeah, the whole family was there. And yeah,
what was your favorite present?
Oh,
what color was the necktie?
No neckties.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
I'm retired, remember?
Well, I see the one you're wearing, and I thought maybe you could use a different
one. No,
I'm just kidding you. What I want you to know is that we are streaming live. Anybody, your kids could be listening right now. Number two, we're archiving it on KYMNradio.net, Wayne Eddy Affair, and then look for your name. Okay. And not right now, but Henry and Kelvin, by some way of being able to transfer the way we do recordings now, when they're your age or Ellen's age, for example, they can listen to Grandpa and find out what you did and who you were and what you were like and what grades you got. Where did you go to college? Where did you go to church? And all of these things. Things I don't know about my grandfathers. I don't know if you know them about yours, but generally there's not an in-depth conversation.
Right. So this is very special service that you're doing and to educate your listenership on things that community members have done in their lives. And
I'm going to tell you that Tim Valley, who's been an engineer for KYMN Radio for decades, he and I were talking at the KYMN Christmas party Friday night about all the things that we've gone through, me for over 50 years, in the way things have changed. And one of the things he brought up was the fact that these conversations that we're having now, we are archiving them, recording them, and he said that he could probably find a way to hook up to the Northfield Historical Society. So as we're talking, they're archiving it because you're from Northfield and people would like to know all about the Rice County CFO 20 years from now or whatever. Good idea?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent idea.
Anything you want to say before I turn things over to Terry Knight?
Just that I really appreciate you having me on your show. It's been a pleasure. I hope, you know, your listeners have learned a little bit about me and a little bit about, you know, some of the things that I've done over my career. And you love
Northfield.
I do love Northfield and Rice County.
All right, Rice County. 41,000 when I came here.
Yeah, now it's just over 65,000.
It's amazing. Thank you very much for being here.
You're very welcome, Wayne.
This is the one KYMN Radio. FM 95.1 and also 1080 on your AM dial, broadcasting live from our studios in beautiful downtown Northfield, Minnesota. And that is the home of Fran Windschuttle.
It's time for 15 with the Author, hosted by Terry Knight. Join Terry as she opens the cover on a different book each week and talks with the author about their book, their life, and their message. Take a deeper look under the cover with Terry.
Plant-based foods are hot right now, but what about meat? Don't we need meat? It's sort of the all-American go-to food. Or is it? My guest today is Robin Asbell, author of Plant-Based Meats, Hearty, High-Protein Recipes for Vegans, Flexitarians, and Curious Carnivores. Robin's been on the show a few times with her books Juice It, Big Vegan, and Great Bowls. This time around, it's creating mock meats. Welcome to the show, Robin.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right, so first off, I need to ask you what a flexitarian is.
Sure. Flexitarians are people who are vegetarian a lot, but they are flexible.
Okay. That makes sense. And there are people that say we need meat, but that's not what you say.
No. We've learned enough about nutrition and protein and everything that we're absolutely able to live with no meat, no dairy, no eggs, all those kinds of things, and be perfectly healthy.
And what is it about our culture in particular, I think the Americans, that meat is so important? I know, like with my husband, he can't even consider an actual meal of really good, heavy soups and stews that have no meat.
I know. It's so psychological, honestly. You know, and I've cooked for people who eat meat. I've cooked for people who are vegetarian all my life. And you'll find that people insist that they have to have meat. But then when you give them some good non-meat food, they will enjoy it, mm-hmm. you know, but there is that mental mindset of like, I just cannot even imagine a dinner without it, and that's psychological.
Yeah, that's for sure, because there's one thing that might be a little bit psychological for me, and that is tofu. It's never been a taste sensation for me, but I'm also somebody that has a thing about texture, so I don't like mushrooms either. How do these other mock meats stand up with that texture?
You know, I'd say these mock meats are really the answer for people like you, because there are a lot of people for whom tofu, you know, unless you grew up with it or, you know, you've learned to love it, it's foreign, mm-hmm. you know. And so these meats have much more of that heft and weight and savoriness that people crave. And I tell you, when you eat a sandwich made with, you know, a nice slab of, you know, faux bologna or mock ham, you do get full and have that same meaty sort of satiety that you would get from eating meat.
And where do we find that? How do you make a mock meat?
Well, there's a couple things. You know, you use high protein base ingredients, you know, and there's a lot of these are made with a wheat gluten flour, and also things like tofu, nuts, seeds, beans, grains, all that kind of stuff. And then I use every trick that I know about how to build in umami. And umami is a Japanese word for a meaty taste. And it turns out that there are plenty of plant-based foods that have